The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. For those of you who have been regular listeners of this program or maybe have picked it up over the last few months, you've been listening to earlier presentations of Healthcare Insight that have been pretty much focused on politics, not so much healthcare. Well, the reason that you may have been listening to older versions of our program was that I have been out dealing with the industrial healthcare complex for the last 3.5 to 4 months. And I would like to go back to that because I had an absolutely amazing experience during my time while I was gone. And I want to share that with you. And I had such a great experience dealing with the healthcare system that I've been railing on for so long. I think it is of some value to try to explain to you what I experienced and how the medical complex can actually provide really good, high quality, patient oriented care. And so I'm ultimately going to write a book about this, which I'm sure not very many people will read, but I'll do it for my own sake to sort of memorialize the kind of experiences that I've had while I was out. And I'm going to entitle this program and ultimately my book, the title is going to be Swinging with God in Cleveland. And the subtitle would be Divine Guidance While Surviving the Medical Industrial Complex. My own personal story, which I'll get into during this hour, I think will help everybody relate to what's going on in the world of healthcare. If you have a major significant healthcare issue like I did, I think this will help you understand how you can get care and treatment and the level and quality of care that you should expect even within the dysfunctional system that occurs in most of our country. First, let me tell you what my healthcare condition is, and then I will lead you up and walk you through my background and previous experiences with healthcare, and then what actually happened in the healthcare environment that I found myself in. First of all, let me explain the healthcare issue I had. I was running short of breath. I thought maybe it was from COVID shots or maybe COVID that I had. I am in my 70s, and I thought maybe that was what was happening and why I was running short of breath. I ultimately went to my cardiologist, and they ran what's called a nuclear stress test. Anybody out there who has a traditional stress test, that really doesn't tell you very much. It is something many doctors prescribe to check your health. But I live here in Florida in a military area, and the doctors tell me the only people that they give a pure stress test to, which is getting on the treadmill and going for a while and getting your heart rate up, they do that only to young and healthy people for the sake of checking a box in the military that they're healthy. For older people, the best thing to do is have what they call a nuclear stress test. That is, they put some liquids into your blood system, and you do the same sort of stress test, but this time the nuclear chemicals that they put in your system don't harm your system. They just give a better reading of what's going on in your heart and tells not only if you have a problem, but most likely where that problem might be. And that's what I had, a nuclear stress test. And the nuclear stress test came back and said, you know, I'm doing okay at low level of exertion, but if I really exert myself, when they went to the second and third level on the nuclear stress test by raising the treadmill up, the results came back and the cardiologist said, you've got a problem in the lower part of your heart, and we probably need to go and put some stents in. So I scheduled a stent here in Panama City area, in the Pensacola area. It's actually in Fort Walton Beach where I live. Same hospital, HCA hospital. And they went in, and I thought I was going to get a single stent, and that would solve the problem. It opened up one of my arteries, my heart would be fine, and I would be back to feeling normal. Well, didn't quite work out that way. They went in to put in a stent, and in that process, the cardiologist removed the catheterization and And when I got up from the operating table, he said, I can't do a stent. You have too many blockages. You're stable at the moment. You're not at immediate risk of a heart attack, but you need open heart surgery. Well, I wasn't about to do open heart surgery here in a regional hospital, as good as they might be, and they have done many surgeries like that. My background in healthcare, as many of you who have listened to this program, this podcast, for a couple of years, knows that my career background was in healthcare as a healthcare consultant with PricewaterhouseCoopers. And so I knew immediately that the very best place in the world to go, the number one rated place for heart bypass surgeries or any other kind of significant intrusive heart surgeries was the Cleveland Clinic. And so that is the journey that I would like to go through on this podcast. So for anybody out there who has had some heart problems, is short of breath, is afraid of having a heart attack, maybe has had a heart attack and had some bypass surgery, but may need more in the future, or you've had some other condition, maybe you've got an aneurysm that you're worried about, and you're kind of waiting to see if that aneurysm gets large enough to require surgery. Maybe for those of you who know that you need open heart surgery, but you're scared to death about the whole process of somebody, opening up your chest and cutting through your chest bone and all that. It's a scary thought. I hope that this podcast will give you some additional thoughts, guidance, and comfort level to get the kind of care and treatment that you want. I know it's easy to put it off. I know it's easy to procrastinate. It's something that is not a pleasant thought, but I want to give you some background of where I came from and the dealing with this, what I call the medical industrial complex. First of all, I'd like to talk about my own personal horrors in the past before any of all this occurred. My family has never had a good experience in the healthcare area. Many families have not had good personal experiences. In fact, if you go back, the Institute of Medicine published a famous paper, and it was called To Err Is Human. And in that report, they dropped a bombshell on the medical community by reporting that up to 98,000 people die yearly of hospital mistakes. So when you go into hospital for almost anything, doesn't even have to be as significant as what I'm talking about, open heart surgery. Hospitals are a dangerous place to be. And this was several years ago, and I think it's probably gotten worse. So in addition to 98,000 people who die yearly in hospital mistakes. And by the way, think about how many airline crashes that would be. And we would be all well aware of it and be demanding changes to the airline industry. But this happens in hospitals, and we don't hear about it in the daily news that goes on how many people die in hospitals. But in addition to that 98,000, there are reports that an additional 7,000 to 9,000 people die due to medical errors. Additional hundreds of thousands of people, patients, experience but often do not report an adverse reaction or other medical complications after they have been in the hospital, and they get involved with this mishmash of opinions and thoughts and equipment. We got more technology going on, and some people know how to use it, some people don't. You got robotics going on that are supposed to be improvement, but if you don't know how to use robotics, guess what? It's not necessarily safer. So many people like me, many of you have had experiences with the medical care that have not been good. Many of you have friends or family members who have experienced life-threatening medical errors or even suffered life-ending malpractice blunders. One fact is inevitable, and I always tell people when they're getting into the medical care, I can tell you this with absolute certainty. 50% of all healthcare providers graduated in the lower half of their class. Yeah, I know there's sort of a minimum threshold for doctors that are all very smart typically, but just because you've got a doctor who knows a lot, can say a lot, doesn't mean that he is as well qualified as the person you want when it's dealing with your heart, with your body, with your disease, with your accident, whatever it is. You want to have the very best. So medical care patients, for example, just to show you the language of the medical care industrial complex, is so different from the real world. In medical care, patients sit in the waiting room, right? Well, what happens in business? In businesses, customers sit in a reception area. Every successful business strives to be customer friendly, and it's rare for medicine to provide truly patient-oriented care. That is the issue, one of the main things and themes and that drives me in the work that I've always done in the medical area, and that is to become more patient-oriented, patient-centered, that the care should be focused on the patient, not on just the delivery of care, and say, gee, the operation was successful, but the patient died kind of a thing. It really needs to be something that is focused on the patient itself. And it's rare to find that, but I did. And that's why I want to tell people how to find that and what to expect, because it does exist, even if it is rare. So there's a significant difference between business and medicine, and it's basically the third-party payment system. You see, the boss of any kind of an arrangement is the person who pays the bill. And in business, if you're buying a service, you're paying the bill. And so the business is going to focus on service quality and value to who is paying the bill, to you. But in medicine, that's not the case. In medicine, the insurance company, the government, or maybe your large employer health plan, that's who pays the bill. So automatically, the patient's concerns, their uniquenesses, and their comfort in the care is not really the focus. And I know that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it's absolutely true from all my years. If you're not paying the bill, you're not the boss. They don't focus on you. That's why when you go to the hospital, it's very rare that you even see the doctor when he comes around. He comes around when you're taking a nap or you're sleeping, but he doesn't spend any time with you. He pokes his head in, sees how you're going, talks to the nurse, but they don't sit down with you for any length of time to explain what the situation is, what the tests are showing, what they might do next with a test. Whatever all that is, you really don't get the kind of time and attention from a doctor that you should when you're paying the bill. So that's why I call this the medical industrial complex, because it's not really about the patient. Now, let me tell you about some of the horrors that my family has gone through over the years and why I can be so cynical about this whole healthcare system and very careful and actually so grateful that I found a patient-oriented healthcare system that you too, if you're listening to this, you too can find when you need that kind of care. So here are some of the examples of what can go wrong as an example. And they've gone back over the decades of my family. I don't know if we're just an unlucky family or what situation is, but we have not had good experiences, which is why I'm so cynical and cautious about the medical environment. In the 1950s, for example, my brother had his tonsils removed as a child. The physician performed a relatively routine procedure with skill. In those days, anesthesia used to put a patient to sleep was ether. Unfortunately, the anesthesiologist made a mistake and failed to cover my brother's eyes adequately. The error caused my brother to be blinded. The doctor told my parents he might never see again. At best, they hoped his body might naturally heal in 3 to 6 months for him to regain his sight. Well, fortunately, after 3 or 4 months, family's anxiety was relieved and his eyesight was gradually restored. But totally unnecessary, total medical error. Now, let me give you another example. A major teaching hospital in Atlanta once treated my mom for an unknown hair loss. She was eventually diagnosed with lupus and given 6 months to live. I remember her and Dad sitting at the kitchen table and telling us the dire prognosis. My mother's emphatic response was, "These doctors are crazy. I'm going to see Dr. Judge." Well, Dr. Judge was an old family country physician from the coal mines of northeast Pennsylvania. After doing his tests, he told my mom that she would live for another 30 years, and he asked for the bottle of medicine that my mom had been taking. She gave it to him, and he threw it in the waste basket and proclaimed, "It's that medicine that they've been giving you that is causing your problems. Now go home in confidence that you will live a long and happy life." My mom lived for another 30 years without any symptoms of lupus. Now let me give you a third example, and then I'll stop there because I can go on and on. The third example is my Uncle Bob. My Uncle Bob lived in Philadelphia and went to a major hospital there for an annual colonoscopy. In the process, they nicked his colon. He did not know of any problem until a few days later when he experienced severe stomach pain. After readmission through the ER, they discovered the problem of a nicked colon. At that point, intestinal leakage had occurred into his body cavity and sepsis had set in. In other words, he was rotting from the inside from the poop that had seeped out from his colon. He died several weeks later in the hospital. So you get the picture. There's so many more medical horror stories like that that I could fill pages and pages of testimony for why you should not trust the medical industrial complex. Instead, I would like to move on in our next segment and explain to you how to avoid those medical pitfalls that most people fall into and how you, too, can find the proper kind of patient-oriented care for a major significant healthcare issue, surgery, whatever it is that you may need. There's steps that you can take, there's signals that you can look for, and there are ways that you can do your own research to assure that you get the right kind of care and treatment. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the positive parts of being able to get the right health care for you or your family. This is Ron Bachman at America's Web Radio. Let's listen to a few commercials, and we'll be right back.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are talking about major healthcare issues and how to find the patient-centered care that you will want when you have a problem or if your existing situation is such that you're looking for the right kind of care and treatment for yourself. I want you to know how to get the care and treatment in the right situation when you are stable enough to be able to look around and study and learn where to go and what the problems are. Many of you out there have probably experienced a heart attack, in which case you got to go to the emergency room and you're subject to whatever medical care and treatment you happen to have available in your community. And hopefully that's good care and treatment. But, you know, now I want to talk about ignoring some of the obvious signs and problems that you might be experiencing. Of course, doctors and hospitals are not solely to blame for the poor medical outcomes that I described in the previous section. People live and eat as though a pill will cure any malady. Obesity is a national crisis, and with most illnesses, individuals ignore warning signs of pain and discomfort. They procrastinate as if dismissing healthcare concerns will make them go away. In some cases, ignorance may be bliss, but with healthcare concerns, procrastination can be deadly. So what I want everybody to do is to step back and be honest with themselves, be honest with their spouses, be honest with their family. And there are some not so subtle ways I know that I ignored my healthcare issues that only made them worse. First, I ignored even slight temporary chest tightness. I can think back over several years when I felt discomfort and wrote it off as a temporary, unknown, and insignificant feeling. After all, in those years, I was young and invincible. Number two, I slowed down my personal physical activity to sort of meet what my body was going to allow me to do. My logic was listening to my body as I aged. I avoided vigorous activities and stress that created discomfort. I adapted rather than making appointments for medical testing. Three, I rationalized that it was due to simultaneous COVID booster and flu shots. This helped me think that it was temporary and likely to dissipate and go away. I rationalized that my heart had so many beats in a lifetime, so slowing down my activities was a good thing for a prolonged, healthy heart activities. You know, it's sort of a self-deception. I don't know if that's a male thing or a human thing that just kind of puts it aside and ignores it. And so people listening today, I'm trying to give you this red flag. Don't ignore those little signs. Don't be afraid of going to a doctor. Sometimes we think, gee, if I go to the doctor, he's going to find out something. Well, yeah, to make you better. So this, the biggest self-deception, I think, was at my age, 73, I had already been granted my biblical 70, so I felt like I was kind of working on house money, if you will, at that point. So I really just kind of didn't want to know. I wanted to keep my head in the sand about the issues. And I understand that. I'm the same way. People are scared of doctors. Many think just by going to a doctor that they will find problems and issues. And if they do, that will mean treatments, medications, costs, the inconvenience to your normal life activities. The unfounded thinking is that ignorance is bliss, and that's just not true in medical care. So I want to talk to you about finding the right kind of medical care when any or all of these things happen to you and you decide, you know, I really do need to go to a doctor and find out. Well, when I moved to the panhandle of Florida, I knew I needed a cardiologist based on my own family history. My dad had died at age 47 of a heart attack. Several male ancestors had died early from apparent heart conditions. So, of course, I knew of my unstated, you know, silent concerns that were going on. I never felt that others, even spouses, wanted to hear of every pain or stress-induced health concerns, kind of like keeping it to myself. You know, nobody else cares about old people with whatever's happening to them, their health conditions. That's kind of boring, especially to younger people. So I was determined to avoid being one of those old people just complaining about healthcare problems. I remember even somebody talking about Florida when I moved here, that that was just God's waiting room. People, old people go down there and just wait to die. Well, I ultimately followed the neighbor's recommendation and contacted Okaloosa Heart and Vascular Center. So there are a lot of good heart services here available in Atlanta because, or in Florida, because it is a more traditional, older population. So that's when I took the traditional treadmill test. And as I mentioned in the first segment, the technician actually in that test stopped mid-procedure and said she saw something unusual. So, you know, I went back to the cardiologist and they said, well, what you really need is a is that nuclear stress test. So I did that and that changed everything. They came back and told me that I was going to have a problem. So, you know, what do I do? Who do I trust? Where do I go? I started doing internet searches. I started checking with some family members who are in the medical field. I have some ex-family members who are cardiologists. Some people check with them. I have a son-in-law who is in the medical device area. They made calls to Emory and to the Cleveland Clinic. I wanted to find out the best care once I discovered that I needed to have open heart surgery. Now, let me fill in a little bit of a gap from the earlier segment as to what my actual condition was. I knew that I needed to have open heart surgery. I didn't know how extensive it was. I knew that from the nuclear stress test, it was probably going to be between 3 and 5 bypasses, and that's about all I knew. But when I had further tests, I found out that I had a aortic aneurysm, and it was a possible issue with my aortic valve. And I found that out by doing some online research as to where I would go just for the bypass surgeries. And I knew that the Cleveland Clinic was the absolute number one best place in the world to go. I subsequently found out, and I don't know if all these numbers are true, but somebody told me when I was there that they do 5,000 bypasses a year, and they have 100 operating rooms. Well, that sounds kind of scary that it's just a big mill. Well, I'll tell you the experience I actually had when I get into more detail. So I was checking out where to go. I have family in Atlanta. Atlanta's got a lot of good medical facilities. I tried to make calls to Emory University, to Kennestone, to Piedmont, to Northside, to St. Joe's. All those areas I was doing research on physicians that did a large volume of bypasses. Now, that may be very common for most people, but again, when it's talking about me, when they're talking about you, you want to know exactly what's going on and that you've got the very best. I'm afraid when we have these types of surgeries, and at least when they're successful, it's kind of like buying a car. Nobody ever says, I got a bad deal on a car. You always say, I got a great deal on a car. Or even if you do a lot of travel, you always say, well, your travel agent's the best and wonderful person because they're always nice and polite. But in medical care, there are good outcomes. There are good doctors, but unfortunately, there are also the problem doctors, the new doctors, the doctors who inadvertently make some mistake. And it's not always a doctor. It's the whole team around the doctors. It's the anesthesiologist. It's the assistant surgeon. It's the people running the heart-lung machine. It's the nurses that are there. Oh, that whole team, any one of them can make a mistake, not just the doctor, that has a significant negative impact on the patient. So here's my process. I started calling around looking for doctors who did an enormous number of bypass surgery, because that's all I thought I needed to start with. And I found several doctors in the Emory system that looked like they would be very highly qualified. I called contacts in Atlanta that are in the medical area to certify and verify that they were, in fact, high-quality doctors. And they were. But when I called to try to make an appointment to try to get a second opinion, not to get a second opinion to have it done in Florida, but to have a second opinion to have it done in Atlanta, I couldn't get through that maze. I would get phone call referrals. It's kind of like a business where they say, you know, hit one to do this, hit two to do that. I wound up with three, ultimately, phone numbers from various contacts I had to make direct calls. And again, in all of those, I got the roundabout no matter what I did, whether it was the cardiology number for St. Joe's or whether it was a direct number to a doctor's office that no longer worked or they wanted a voicemail. It was very difficult to penetrate the Atlanta marketplace and the cardiologist there. I ultimately got in contact with somebody who answered the phone in Atlanta that was in charge of the cardiology services for St. Joe's. And I said, I'd like to talk to somebody, get a second opinion. Can I send the records up of my catheterization that said, you know, I need to have open heart surgery? And they said, well, the next available cardiologist is like 3 months away. Well, that's not going to solve the problem for what I need. I knew I was stable, but would I be stable for 3 months? Well, I ultimately found the saving grace. For some way and reason, I contacted the Cleveland Clinic through what they call their virtual second opinion portal. The second opinion portal at the Cleveland Clinic got into the patient-centered approach, because guess what? When I called them, they were very nice and polite, very welcoming, totally different attitude and atmosphere of any of the calls I was making when I was trying to contact people in Atlanta. But they have a business model that may turn many people off, but actually attracted me. They told me right up front after they welcomed me in and talked about some of the services they had, they said, we charge $1,850 and we don't think it's covered by insurance, so be prepared for that. And I thought, wow, I am the client. If they're going to be able to get more people like me reaching out to them through their second opinions portal, they're going to have to provide a service that meets my needs so that I could recommend them, and that approach of second opinion portal would actually be successful for Cleveland. So I wasn't turned off by the fact that it would cost me directly $1,850. I was actually engaged with them because I am the boss now. Now, I know a lot of people don't have an extra $1,850 that they want to make a phone call, but if you're having a significant healthcare issue, trust me, it is worthwhile to become the boss in the situation so that you are driving the whole discussion and they are serving your needs to find the right kind of care and service that you will want to treat whatever your condition or accident or heart condition, in my case, whatever that is. They're looking to help me instead of giving me the runaround. So that was the real key there. Now, you call up, it's online. You get your choice of care managers. There's about 10 of them. I didn't know any of them, so I picked one. And from there, I was able to send them very easily online all the medical information that I'd gotten from the catheterization, the doctor's notes and records from HCA here in Florida, and was able to send it up to them. They reviewed it. They called me back several times. They actually had a whole string of emails welcoming me, giving me information, talking about the condition. And then they ultimately connected me to a physician, a Dr. Bakeen. And he actually looked at all my records. He called me back on their own sort of internal Zoom line. And we had a discussion of getting more of my family history and background and what my current situation was. We had a good discussion. And then he said, yes, there's some things we think we can do for you. We need to schedule you to come up here to Cleveland. So that is what I did. And I want to talk about how wonderful that experience was and how it was very unique and different from this very beginning where I was in charge. I had the I was paying the bill, so I was the boss. They were trying to meet my needs, and they're being very cordial. They gave me all the time in the world. They gave me emails back and forth. They gave me all sorts of explanations and about what my condition might be and how I should move forward with a second opinion and getting to the proper physician and team for the right kind of care that I would need. So let's take a quick commercial break, and I'll come right back and tell you about the most wonderful medical experience I could have ever expected at the Cleveland Clinic following their second opinion, virtual second opinion portal.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday, 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
Attention veterans with PTSD. If you can't sleep at night, listen to A Veteran's Place, hosted by Dr. Don Moeller, at 10 a.m., every Thursday, for your answer to sleeping, here on the Veteran Station, owned by a vet, with shows just for vets. AmericasWebRadio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we're talking about a truly patient-centered experience that I went through after having been identified as being in need of open heart surgery. I originally thought I was supposed to have 3 to 5 bypasses. I contacted the Cleveland Clinic as my ultimate choice after having gone through the many issues and problems with the Atlanta market, so that I knew sort of where I wanted to go by the way I had been received and the openness of the system of working through this medical industrial complex. There was an open door to a better way of being care and treated. So let me again tell you how to decide on some of these critical unknowns. You want to identify a trusted, skilled surgeon. And usually those who have done the most of a given procedure are going to be the best to utilize. They've made mistakes on others, maybe. Their experience, they know the ins and outs. They know how to deal with problems that may arise that would surprise anybody in the operating room, things that were unexpected. You want to be sure that you have a hospital system that is well-equipped with the latest and greatest equipment, new equipment. And you want to be sure that you have a patient-oriented team, a staff that you can trust. And the whole hospital system needs to be national and internationally ranked, and there's a lot of different sources to go to. Remember that a hospital isn't doing the procedure itself. A hospital is simply a place where doctors go to operate, so they have to have the right kind of equipment, the right staff supporting them, the right kind of intake people, preparation people, testing, and all that. So let me tell you what the Cleveland Clinic did, because I am such a great fan of the Cleveland Clinic and what they did for me, not only how they allowed me to enter into their system where I was the boss, but clearly once I got in the system, the insurance company, Medicare, the Medicare Advantage program that I have was going to pay the bills. But I got in there on my own terms, them addressing my needs and explaining to me what was going to happen because I was paying that bill up front. And my insurance company said they were going to reimburse that virtual second opinion anyway, but my understanding is that maybe other companies would not have paid for it, which is why the intake on that was very clear up front that it may or may not pay for it, but it put me in the boss position. Now, I want to talk to you about just when I went to the Cleveland Clinic. I clearly just flew there on Delta, going through Atlanta to get up to Cleveland. And when you arrive in Cleveland, they send a limousine to you. You don't get off and get in a taxi. You don't get off and call up Uber. They make you feel special from the very beginning of bringing you a limousine. It's all built into your services. There's no additional cost for it. You feel like a celebrity, so it's a great way to start. I should have mentioned that when I decided to go to the Cleveland Clinic after having talked to them through the medical issues and getting the doctor that was likely to do the service, that they then immediately transferred me over to their hospitality area. Their hospitality area is for while you are there, even though you're in the hospital, you may have a spouse or a friend or family member join you to be with you to help, you know, care and know that you've got a family member by your bedside. There are three hotels on campus with some various differences, slight differences, but you get your choice. So as soon as I scheduled going to the doctors and the tests that were done, they transferred me over to get a good hospital room that was right there on campus, and they have a shuttle that goes around and takes you to the center hospital. But you can actually walk from any of the three hospitals to any of the three hotels to the hospital. So they take you right to the hotel from the airport in a limousine. Now, I want to tell you about a number of things in terms of how they operate with the tests. There were four tests that were done several times. There is the EKG, the echocardiogram, the X-ray, and blood work. And my experience there in most hospital settings, in most of the environments you would go to, you might have a test and they say, well, come in at 9 o'clock. Well, you go in there and you got a room full of people, again, that waiting room concept, and you might be there a half hour while you're waiting for your name to be called. The Cleveland Clinic, that is not what I experienced, nor what it seemed like anybody experienced. When they say you're going to have a test at 9 o'clock, you have your test at 9 o'clock. You get in there, you don't wait but just a few seconds, if at all, and they take you right in and have the test. Then you have a test at 9:15. When you finish that first test, you go to another area, and you have that test at 9:15, and they're ready and waiting for you. So it is a very well-structured process. In fact, when I went there the first day, I was supposed to have several tests the first day and then the second day before I would go to surgery, so the doctor would see all the results of those tests. They were tracking me so closely that in the middle of one of the tests, after I'd finished, middle of some of the testing, they said, don't go to this third test. Go downstairs and have this test because there's an opening. So they were tracking me and knew exactly when an opening occurred for a test that I was supposed to have the second day that somebody got canceled on. So what happened was that I was able to go down and get that test done and then go back and get my subsequent test done. So that the next day, instead of coming in at 7:30 in the morning, I'd already had that test done the first day. I was able to sleep and get rested and come in about 12:30 for the additional tests on the second day. But I don't know of any other hospital that would follow somebody that closely that they knew what tests I needed. And when an opening occurred, they actually shifted around for my convenience, not for the convenience of the hospital. In most cases, I think the situation would have been, well, okay, we had an opening down there. Just keep Bachman on his pattern and getting his test done as we're originally scheduled. It was so helpful to me for them to be able to recognize and follow along what was happening to me. So we did 2 days of testing, and then I got to meet the physician. I actually met with a cardiologist before I met with the cardiovascular surgeon who was going to do the open heart surgery. So I met with several doctors, very patient-oriented in the discussion, very deliberate in explaining to me what the situation was, what the tests had done. And it was the test done those last day, even before the doctor saw me that second day, the test done the previous day and that same day, they were getting the results in their office. They could look at the videos. They could look at the results of the X-rays, the echocardiogram, the EKGs. They had all that on file right there and then to take a look at. They didn't take, you know, 3 days, 2 months to look at the results, to have somebody else analyze it. That was all done and available for me right away for the physician to take a look at. Now, when I met with the cardiovascular surgeon, after having met with the cardiologist, they gave me some background and some details on how the heart functions and what some of the issues might be. When I went to the cardiovascular surgeon, and he went through online and could show me the results online and what the issues were with my heart, I had developed a great confidence at that point in the entire team. They were very direct. They were very compassionate. They're very knowledgeable. They had things on time. So the whole process developed a level of trust that I might not have had because I was very skeptical about getting anything done, certainly scared about what an open heart surgery might mean for me. So he looked at it and he said, listen, you're probably going to have 3 to 5 bypasses. And he pointed out the areas of why I might have that. And he also said, your aortic aneurysm is at the break point where you might need to have that done independently if you didn't have the bypass, because if that breaks, you're a dead man. And he said, but as long as we're in there, we need to fix that. And, you know, I certainly had trust and confidence at that point with him, with the entire system, with the Cleveland Clinic. And so I knew he wasn't looking for additional work. He wasn't looking to do more procedures just to make more income. And I said, if that needs to be done, I trust your judgment. Get in there and do it. And he said, you know, where you have this aortic aneurysm, it is right at what's called the root of the aorta. And that was, it's right next to the heart. He said, I have to take that out and replace it. When I do, I will see the aortic valve. If the aortic valve, in my opinion, has some crystallization in it, or I don't think it will last more than 5 years, I'd like to replace whatever I see is needed to be replaced there. And I said, Doc, I fully trust you at this point. I understand the system here. I have read enough about it to have a comfort level and understand that could be the case. So if you see that, then you take and replace that as well. Well, ultimately, all three of those major surgeries were needed during my care and treatment in the operating room. And I want to talk as well the rest of this program about the final care and treatment after this buildup. But they did wind up doing three bypasses. They did replace the aortic aneurysm. And they repaired the aortic valve. So all that occurred in one operational setting. So I was in the operating room for about 9 hours to get all that done. And from the time they put me to sleep to where the anesthesia wore off was about 12 hours. Given that buildup, I want to spend the rest of the time talking about the absolute wonder of the experience that I had. I have a few minutes left here in this segment, but I really wanted to nail it home because for many of you listening, I need to tell you that I have a great faith. I have great Christian faith. I believe Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. And throughout this whole process, I was able to, thinking through the value of my faith and what I want to do. Obviously, I started off when all this was beginning with a sense of anxiety. By the time I got to the Cleveland Clinic with the level of trust I had with them and really researching my faith, looking inside and saying, you know, is my faith really strong or have I just been thinking it is? I knew that the Lord was with me. I knew that once they put me to sleep in the operating room that I would wake up either to the Lord or to my wife. And so I was going to be a winner either way. I had had a wonderful life so far and I had no regrets. So there was a whole process here of building up and expecting that things would turn out, whatever they were going to do was going to be fine. I had taken care of my life issues with wills and trusts and doing the right things for my family members, my wife. So I was prepared for whatever the outcome was going to be. When I went into the operating room, as an example, I knew that when they put me to sleep that I probably wouldn't feel any of the pain. I had not felt any pain. I had no angina. I had no chest pains from, you know, before I went to the hospital. So, you know, I'd been in a stable condition being able to make these decisions. But I went into the operating room and I did something very deliberate. I went into the operating room and there were about 12, 14 people there from the surgeon, assistant surgeon, nurses, anesthesiologists, people that are going to run the heart-lung machine because they're obviously going to have to stop my heart when they open it up to be able to do all this stuff. I said, okay, guys, gather around. I said, on the count of three, I want a big amen from everybody. So I go 1, 2, 3, and they'll go amen. And before they put me to sleep, I could hear one person say, gosh, we've never done that thing before. And subsequently, when I was in a recovery room, one of the assistant surgeons came in and I asked him if he was in the operating room when I sort of did my thing to set the tone of faith and belief before the surgery. He said he was there and he said, yeah, he says that was kind of cool. So that started the whole process. And I want to wrap up the next session about telling you about other instances, which I will call God winks moments, things that happened that were never expected, that I was looking to just get through recovery, but amazing things happened that I really feel important to share with anybody going to go through a major surgery that has their own level of faith, so that they can be assured that there is somebody there that will walk through them with them, not just their own family members, but the Lord is in fact there and real and will be there for you if you just ask him to come into your presence. Well, with that, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back, and I'll tell you about some of the miracles that happened, the Rocking with God in Cleveland concept.
It's a museum, it's a showroom, it's an experience. The Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania is 336,000 square feet of rare, custom, and specialty automobiles on display and on consignment. From the earliest production cars to modern exotics, Classic Auto Mall is a feast for the eyes and the memories. Stroll through time in any season in this climate-controlled facility that you simply have to see to believe. Admission is free. Just remember to bring comfortable shoes.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, join me, Roger B., every Tuesday at 1400 hours right here on America's Web Radio for the Locked and Loaded show. We will talk about guns, weapons, ammo, gun accessories, prepping, and so much more. So be sure to join us every Tuesday at 1400 or 2 p.m. for Locked and Loaded on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today, I'm talking about an amazing hospital open-heart surgery experience that I had. It's hard to say that anybody who's gone through open-heart surgery would find a way to praise the people who did it, the way it was conducted, the way the outcome is. But I really am amazed that I found a patient-centered approach. I already talked about how big and complex the Cleveland Clinic is. I talked about how I was fortunate enough to be able to find them after searching through the number of doctors in Atlanta. The experience was so remarkable that I hope you got a sense of what they did, how big they are. And I think I mentioned in the earlier sessions that they have, that they do 5,000 of these a year, and they do through 100 operating rooms. I have to say that the greatest compliment I can give to the Cleveland Clinic is I never felt like I was part of an assembly line. I felt that I was the only person in that entire hospital that was being treated. That's how personalized it was. That's how uniquely focused on me they were, that I actually felt, without exaggeration, that I was the only person in the hospital that mattered to these folks. Now, let me tell you about my spiritual experiences during this last segment, because my faith is very strong, as I mentioned. I asked when we went in the operating room to give a big amen. To me, it was kind of like a football team going out on the field, and they get together and they do a rah-rah, you know, 1-2-3 win or whatever their cheer is to go out and sort of get together as a single team. I think that worked because it was an amazing team that actually worked on me. But I want to give you a flavor of the spiritual nature of my experience there. Now, all of us know the physical world around us. What I think sometimes we forget, even as believers, that there is a spiritual world around us as well. And if you think back, especially for the believers and readers of the Bible, there were angels that were around, that when Mary was pregnant, explaining the situation, angels explaining to Joseph, angels at Christ's tomb. Throughout the Bible, you will see angels, and even the Lord himself, when he was resurrected, he showed up to his disciples and hundreds of other people in various circumstances to prove that he was a risen God. So we know that there's a spiritual world, and, you know, in the last several weeks, there's been all sorts of stuff about what used to be called UFOs. I think they call them now UAPs, unidentified aeronautical phenomena, something along those lines. Well, I believe that there are spiritual beings that are around that are there to help us and to be there with us and to give us guidance and comfort. And I want to give just a couple of examples. So many things like that happened during the time I was in the hospital and in ICU and in a regular bed and even leaving the hospital. But I want to give a flavor of a couple of things that people who aren't of any faith don't feel as strongly as maybe I do that these things are possible. They may find them amazing. You may say, well, yeah, that's what medication and drugs can do to the mind. But let me give you one example of my post-surgery when I was in the intensive care unit. First of all, there are people who give you a certain sense of comfort, and you know that they care. Well, the nurse that was in my ICU, her name was Debbie, and she looked exactly like my first cousin, Debbie Upton. And her name is now Wetzel, but Debbie is the person that was in the ICU, and she reminded us so much of that first cousin. She was very caring. When I woke up about 12 hours after they originally put me to sleep for a 9-hour, 10-hour surgery, she was just the most kind, polite person and gave me a sense of comfort. Now, I also knew that when I woke up from surgery that I would have a breathing tube in me. I was aware of that because I had done research. And so I knew that that there was a machine that was basically breathing for me and that I shouldn't try to take that tube out, or I shouldn't worry about it. I can continue to breathe a little bit like I normally would, but at some point they would take that tube out. So there was a great comfort in having Debbie there as my nurse, someone who looked like my first cousin. But for the most part, I slept through that period of time right after I woke up. I was alone because it was after 9:30. My wife, who had been there in the ICU, was not allowed to stay overnight with me, so I woke up. It was, just myself there and my nurse, Debbie. So I closed my eyes and just kind of relaxed and, see if I could fall back to sleep. And the most amazing thing happened, but I want to preface what happened so you'll fully understand and appreciate what was going on. And maybe this is where my mind came from, these thoughts. A few weeks before in my men's group, we talked about a very unusual situation that happened at a hospital in, I believe it was Oklahoma. The Health and Human Services went in there to do their normal annual inspections. But this time their inspection said in the hospital chapel area, there was a lighted candle that was encased in a framework that the HHS said they had to remove, that was a fire hazard. Well, the hospital fought back at it, became somewhat of a national news, and they said, we're not going to remove it. The cross that's next to it is obviously the religious symbol, and the candle to that hospital administration had been there 25 years and represented Christ. So that maybe was in my mind someplace. So now let's go back to the ICU, and I'm sitting there trying to sort of just work my way through this waking period from the anesthesia and trying to be relaxed because the tube was in my throat. I closed my eyes, and amazingly enough, I was in a dome. It was a dome that was sort of like angel hair was the fabric of the dome. There was sort of holes in it. I could see through it, but I couldn't quite see through it. And it was in a dome shape that as I was looking up, and I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't know why. I opened my eyes, and of course, the ceilings were flat. Everything was boxy in the actual ICU, but I felt this dome presence. And so I closed my eyes again, and the dome reappeared with this blue-gray angel hair sort of fabric. And I saw movement on the outside, and then so my mind was going and saying, okay, well, what am I going to see? Am I going to see Jesus here? Am I going to see some figure? And I kept looking, and there was light, and there's movement out there. And then all of a sudden, a figure stepped forward, but it wasn't Jesus. It wasn't God. It was more of a figure that was sort of a cross between maybe a Santa Claus and Neptune. It was a person with his long white beard, and then he disappeared. And so I kept looking around as this movement was going on. And at that point, a candle came into the middle of this dome, what I was looking at. And so I took that to mean that was Jesus, that was the Holy Spirit that was coming in to tell me everything was okay. It was a very remarkable experience. I didn't understand it at the time why I was having this sort of a vision of the dome and why all this was going on, but it certainly gave me a great deal of comfort that the Lord was there. I was not asking him to come in at the time. He just sort of came in as I was looking at all this. Let me give you one more experience that I had that was, and there were many in between experiences between that ICU. But when I was finally released from the Cleveland Clinic, they actually have two releases. You get released from the hospital bed, and then you go back to your hotel that I had mentioned earlier in this hour. And you stay overnight back in your hotel, and then you come back to the hotel, and they give you another series of tests, and a cardiologist interviews you and then releases you basically from the program there at the Cleveland Clinic. Well, when I got released from the hospital bed, and they release you in a wheelchair, my wife is wheelchairing me back to the hotel. We get into the hotel lobby, and it's a pretty day, and it's early in the afternoon. So I said, well, let's go out to this little patio area. The sun was shining, and I didn't really want to go back to the bedroom. So she wheeled me out there, locked down the wheelchair, and there was a table and four fixed chairs. And so I sat in one of those chairs, and I just closed my eyes and was taking in the brilliant sun, the radiant heat that was coming down. I could hear the birds in the background, my sort of heightened appreciation that I was still alive. And I was put my feet up on the wheelchair, and all of a sudden I felt this movement going forward, and I was like I was in some swing, so I was moving forward and I stopped. And then I started moving backwards and I stopped. And then I started moving forward again. I went through this cycle a little bit, and then I turned to my wife as I had my eyes closed, enjoying this very peaceful sort of calming rocking of myself. And I said, I explained the situation. She said, well, what happens if you open your eyes? So I opened my eyes and it all stopped. And I thought, oh, darn, that was such a great experience. I loved it. So I closed my eyes again. And sure enough, I went back to, I was rocking forward and rocking back. And I asked my wife, I said, is somebody behind me rocking me? Obviously they couldn't because I was in a fixed chair. And she said, no. And I said, well, somehow is rocking me. And she said, well, I guess that's the amazing part of medication, but I hadn't had any medication for a while. So I'll take my interpretation that it was the Holy Spirit sort of rocking me forth and rocking me back, which is why I started this whole hour by telling you that the title of the book, when I will describe this and many other experiences I had along the way, as Rocking with God in Cleveland, because that's what I feel was sort of the culmination of all of this. I will mention one other thing as I go through this. In this last minute or two that we have together. There are angels all around us. I was not in the greatest of shape on that day to go home when I was released from the program. I could, but my flight would have taken me through Atlanta and back to Destin, Florida on a holiday weekend. And I would prefer not to do that. But I had sort of an angel for a neighbor who is wealthy enough to have a private jet. And she suggested that she would offer up her private jet to bring me home. So rather than taking 8 hours and the delays in Atlanta and viruses and germs and everything else that might be available, I know most people wouldn't have this the luxury of having a friend, a neighbor with this kind of capability. But she offered up a private jet, and I tried to avoid it, but then I finally said, yeah, I know, I probably really do need this. It would be a wonderful way to get home in less than 2 hours and get my own bed and recover. And so I did have a private jet, a NetJet service take me home. And it was just a wonderful blessing that I was able to enjoy from this neighbor. So God exists in all sorts of forms. He will come to you when you need it most. He will come to you if you ask. It will come through friends and neighbors that you've been kind to, that you've been blessed to have them in your life. And so I want this whole hour to explain exactly what I went through, how I went through it, and why, if you also have faith, if you also realize that God is going to be with you, that you don't have to have the kind of anxiety and concerns that you might otherwise have if you have to go through any kind of a major surgery like I did. With all that, I thank God that I'm still here and alive, and I appreciate the audience and the well wishes that I've gotten over these last number of months, and the ability to say I'm now pretty much fully recovered. I'm going through cardiac rehab, and that's been very helpful as well. So I thank you for your time and attention today. This is Ron Bachman signing off for America's Web Radio. I'll be back next week with a new program.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.